Hello, this is your Polycast for Wednesday, August 24th, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio newsroom. On today's edition, Minneapolis appeals a judge's ruling that put a minimum wage question on the ballot. St. Paul spells out how police will work in schools. There could be up to 9 presidential candidates on Minnesota's ballot in November. Brian Baxt has more.
Republican Donald Trump and Democrat Hillary Clinton will have plenty of company on the ballot. 4 minor party candidates have qualified so far, and 3 others submitted the required signatures before the deadline. The Libertarian Party's Gary Johnson is the latest with confirmation that he made it. Signatures for the Independence Party's Evan McMullen were turned in with little time to spare. John Claybrook is deputy campaign manager for McMullen. He says the ability for the recently declared candidate to obtain enough signatures in Minnesota bodes well for his standing in the state.
We think, just based on our experience so far here, we have the people, the volunteers, the support in order to make a strong showing in this state.
Parties whose candidates get at least 5% of the vote become major parties under state law. Brian Baxt, Minnesota Public Radio News.
Supporters of a $15 an hour minimum wage in Minneapolis are planning another major get-out-the-vote effort this fall, but now they're facing another fight in getting the issue before city voters. Matt Sepik has the latest.
What do we want?
15!
When do we want it?
Now!
At a rally outside a Wendy's fast food restaurant in North Minneapolis yesterday morning, backers of the minimum wage proposal celebrated a big legal victory. Over the objections of a majority of city council members, Hennepin County Judge Susan Robiner ruled on Monday the proposed charter amendment must go before voters in November. Mike Griffin is a field director with the group Neighborhoods Organizing for Change. He says a city minimum wage above the state minimum of $9.50 an hour will improve the lives of the working poor and benefit the city as a whole.
$15 an hour gives opportunities for workers, gives opportunities for families, and in cities that have done this across America already, it gives opportunities to economic growth for cities.
Griffin pledged the biggest voter drive in the city's history with phone calls, door knocking, and a targeted social media campaign. But it's likely they'll be spending more time in court trying to get the issue on the ballot. Minneapolis City Attorney Susan Siegel filed an appeal yesterday, along with a motion requesting a stay of Judge Robiner's order. Pointing out that early voting starts in a month, Siegel said the matter needs to be resolved quickly. She also asked for accelerated review by the Minnesota Supreme Court. Siegel says her legal arguments have nothing to do with whether raising the minimum wage is a good idea or not. She says the ballot proposal raises a fundamental question about how Minneapolis is governed.
Our charter gives exclusive authority to the city council to pass legislation. Our city charter does not provide for the right of initiative or referendum.
Siegel says Minneapolis citizens could gain that right under state law, but that would require a change to the charter. The city's business community has been pushing to keep the minimum wage proposal off the ballot and pushed for Siegel to appeal the judge's ruling. Minneapolis Regional Chamber of Commerce Interim President John Stanek says companies large and small are concerned about more regulations. He says many members are already planning for the sick and safe time measure that takes effect July 1st of next year.
When you take this in tandem with the recently passed sick and safe leave ordinance, this is a lot for business owners to absorb, and they're really concerned about what this will do to their per employee cost of operating their business.
If courts allow it on the November ballot and voters approve, the proposed minimum wage increase would be phased in starting in 2017. Employers in the city with 500 or more workers would have to pay the full $15 an hour by August 1st, 2020. Smaller employers would have another 2 years after that to comply. With reporting from John Collins, I'm Matt Sepik, Minnesota Public Radio News.
The state is taking action to protect more homeowners in the South Metro area from chemicals in their groundwater. The contamination is the result of waste from 3M that leaked into the groundwater. The state has been monitoring the chemicals for more than a decade, and while officials say the level of contamination hasn't increased, the level that's considered safe has. Dan Gunderson has that story.
Perfluorinated chemicals were used in many products, from carpet and fabric to cookware and firefighting foam. Use of perfluorinated chemicals has largely been phased out, but the chemicals are persistent in the environment and trace amounts are found in most people. Minnesota Pollution Control Agency Commissioner John Link Stein says in the early 2000s, Minnesota found waste from 3M had contaminated water at several sites in southern Washington County.
One of which was an old landfill in Lake Elmo. More sites were found in other specific locations throughout South Washington County. And that investigation has been going on for 10 or more years now.
State officials say the plume of contaminated groundwater is stable or shrinking because of efforts to treat the water. After the chemicals were found in wells, the state set safe levels for the chemical in drinking water at 300 parts per trillion. Public water supplies and private wells were treated to meet that standard. Earlier this year, the Federal Environmental Protection Agency lowered its recommended safe levels of the chemical to 70 parts per trillion, based on new research showing potential risk to developing fetuses. Minnesota Health Commissioner Ed Ellinger says the state is reviewing its drinking water standard for PFCs, but in practice, the state is using the new federal recommendation until that review is complete. And in a teleconference with reporters, Ellinger said that means dozens more households draw water from wells now considered contaminated.
People in the 80 homes in southern Washington County that will be affected in the levels that we have measured will be offered bottled water in the next few days because their well water is known to exceed the federal guidelines.
Ellinger says no public water supplies exceed the new federal safe drinking water level. The health department will alert any private well owners that exceed 70 parts per trillion. Ellinger says those homeowners will be offered bottled water and the option of installing a filter to remove the chemicals. The state will test another 400 to 500 private wells in the area where groundwater is contaminated.
While we believe that the immediate health risks for most people exposed to PFCs are low, the latest information from EPA indicates a possible risk for developing fetuses and infants.
Ellinger says some people in the East Metro had elevated levels in their blood when the contamination was first discovered.
When we stopped their exposure to PFCs and drinking waters by connecting them to city water and providing filters, we have greatly reduced the level of these PFCs in their blood to near background levels within 8 years. So we know that interventions actually do work.
PFC contamination has been found in other parts of the state. The health department says the chemical has been found in a well in Bemidji, but no drinking water supply there exceeds the new federal standard. The health department plans to schedule an informational meeting for East Metro residents who are concerned about the PFC contamination. Covering the environment, Dan Gunderson, Minnesota Public Radio News, Moorhead.
After a controversy over the role of police officers in its schools, the St. Paul School District has a new approach. The school board approved a contract with St. Paul Police last night that spells out how officers will interact with students. Solveig Wastvedt reports.
Highland Park senior Davina Newman says she gets uncomfortable seeing a police officer in the halls at school. Davina says the police presence can be intimidating.
Seeing someone come into your building with all of that really scary gear on, that's your school. You know, you're supposed to go there to learn, not to feel threatened by someone who gets paid a large amount of money to be there.
Davina isn't alone. St. Paul's use of what are called school resource officers has drawn criticism this year. The officers came under scrutiny after a trespassing arrest at Central High School in May that critics called excessively violent. The incident sparked student protest. A few months earlier, a student group surveyed peers about the officers. The group did not recommend removing officers from schools, but said the district should clarify the officer's role. Last night, the St. Paul School Board approved a new contract that it says provides that clarification. The contract provides 9 officers, 7 assigned to district high schools, with 2 mobile officers. The 1-year agreement is projected to cost the district just under $900,000. Last night, district official Jackie Turner acknowledged the increased community interest in this year's contract.
We welcomed the feedback, and because of that feedback, we have a better product.
Turner says eliminating school resource officers wasn't on the table for the district. She says she's heard from teachers who say they need the officers. At a meeting last month, the district presented feedback from the St. Paul Principals Association, saying the group strongly supports having officers in schools to promote safety and positive climate. But Turner says officers will meet monthly with staff and students to discuss school issues. They'll also report monthly on interactions with students, and data will be collected on the interactions. Turner says the contract also makes it clear that officers aren't responsible for student discipline. They're present to deal with criminal behavior.
We've come a long way. It's not perfect, but it's leaps and bounds from where we started years ago, and it's leaps and bounds from where we started even in April. I think everyone can see themselves in this contract, the students, the police, the principals.
The new contract also aims to boost positive interactions between students and police. Officers will participate in back-to-school activities, and they have new uniforms designed to be less intimidating. A St. Paul student will get to submit interview questions for potential officers. St. Paul Police spokesman Steve Linders says officers are already building those positive relationships with students.
They keep the school safe. They serve as mentors. They provide advice to students. They build relationships. And they're positive role models for students in the schools. And that's important.
In the end, the board approved the contract with 5 yes votes and 1 abstention. Board member Steve Marchese supported the agreement, but he says the conversation about police in schools should continue.
We still have to get clear about the overall purpose for why we want to have officers in our schools. To my mind, that has to support the kind of culture and climate that we wish to see in our buildings, and that we should start with the kind of culture and climate we want in our buildings first, and then think through what is the staffing that we need and who are the people that we need to make that happen.
Board member John Broderick stood behind the contract but cited one reservation, cost. Broderick said he'd like to revisit how much the city of St. Paul contributes. This year's projected bill for the school district is slightly higher than last year's projection. The city of St. Paul will pay about 10% of the total cost. Covering education, I'm Solveig Wastvedt, Minnesota Public Radio News.
And that's your Polycast for this Wednesday, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio Newsroom.